So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
Edition of Review Away with Wei Ting, and I'm John Pollock. Wei, how was your week this week?
My week, I don't know. I never know what to say when you ask this question, or when anyone asks this question, for that matter. It's just...
How's today going for you?
Today's been all right.
I'm very under the weather. I woke up Monday morning, and I was not feeling the best, and then later into the workday on Monday, I got progressively worse, and then Tuesday was terrible because I woke up and it was just horrible. And then I had to interview Jimmy Hart that night, so I stayed home during the day, and then was feeling okay. Went out to Bite to do the interview with Jimmy Hart, and then I had to stick around till 11 because the surf was on, and I just got worse and worse that night. Wednesday was not a very good day either, illness wise. And then Thursday, you and me, we had a big shoot day. And now today, I think it's all just kind of hit me, and I'm not making any progress, I find. This morning, I woke up, and I just felt dead.
You seemed all right yesterday.
Yesterday was actually fine, and it was not till this morning that I, like, my nose is all stuffed up, as you can probably sound. I got a tea here. My throat is...
So should I be in this audio booth with you right now?
It's a very enclosed space here, but for the good of the show, I think you're going to have to risk illness. So I guess I'm warning you ahead of time. But, Wei, something that did not make me sick was the Royal Rumble, 1988. This is the first Royal Rumble that was televised, but actually, Wei, in 1987, they did do a house show featuring a Royal Rumble. So there technically was a first Royal Rumble prior to this one. But this was the first televised edition, and it was done from Hamilton, Ontario, Wei, right by us here at Cops Coliseum. And it was January the 24th, 1988, 22 years ago. With Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura on commentary for this.
How old were we at this time?
I would have been
four.
I would have been three.
Three.
We would have just before we both turned four. So I did not watch this event when it first aired.
Me neither.
I wonder if it even aired in Canada. It was from Canada, but do you think it aired in Canada?
Well, we don't get USA. I wouldn't know where Canadians would have been able to catch
the
show.
Think TSN, they carried like Stampede Wrestling in the 80s, but they didn't carry... The World Wrestling Federation.
CH carried.
Maybe CH would have carried a special because they would carry the Saturday night's main event specials on. Well, they'd be on NBC and then later Fox. So it's a mystery. If anyone out there was a wrestling fan in the Southern Ontario region and would like to send in your feedback,
John, I'm actually really concerned. This is. I'm like, you know, 1 foot away from you talking, and your voice just sounds terrible.
Well, if my throat, if I feel a nasty cough coming on, I'm going to give you a warning so that you can move and I can do it into the mic so everyone can hear how horrible my cough sounds. It's brutal, dude. It sounds like I'm dying.
Should I have a mask with me or something?
I don't have, I'm not going to give you SARS.
Even for H1N1, the mask is a very popular
H1N1 is so device. 2009 Wei. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
You have the new one.
So let's get into this event, the Royal Rumble 1988. Now, I'm going to have to preface this by saying that last week I was speaking about the Royal Rumbles I own, and I don't know what's happened because I remember having quite a bunch of them on VHS, and now I only have three. So I don't know if people have taken them, if I've lost them, but it's only the Royal Rumbles that are gone because I've been going through all these old tapes to try and get them in order now that we're going back and needing them. So I found the 1988 version, the 1990 version, and the 2000 version. And this tape, I was like, well, Wei, I've got the tape, so no problem. So I started to watch this on Tuesday, the day I was sick and at home. And I watched the first hour, and then my VHS, it just went, the screen went blank. And it was just the audio. And I'm like, I am not going to listen to the last half of the Royal Rumble. So I didn't know what to do. I was like... Please tell me I didn't waste the last hour watching this, and then we're going to have to do a different event because we can't finish it. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, the MVP of this podcast, Wei, Justin Arthur, came through. I messaged him on Facebook, and immediately he came back with the links to the event. And it's because of Justin Arthur that we are doing this review of the 1988 Royal Rumble.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you very much, Justin. Always there for us when we need any random wrestling event. He is able to find it online for us. Because yeah. I'm not very technologically savvy yeah. when it comes to torrents yeah. and finding stuff and pirating, quite like you.
Justin, I would also like to send out a request for a copy of Avatar, if you know where I could find a good quality version
Wait
of Avatar.
You watched Avatar
well,
already.
Well, I know people who haven't watched it that would like to watch it.
But you have to watch it in 3D.
You don't have to watch it in 3D.
Yeah, that's the huge draw to it.
When I
who wants to go watch it on their fucking laptop?
Yeah, but if I have a really good setup at home...
That's how they're going to kill piracy, is by making movies that you can't enjoy by pirating.
That is the intent, yes. But, I mean, Avatar, the story, I think, can carry even without the 3D quality.
What did you think of Avatar?
I thought it was all right. I mean, I'll be honest, when I was sitting there watching it, I didn't even notice the 3D after a while. I was just stuck to this story. The Na'vi, John. The Na'vi and the...
I haven't watched Avatar yet, and I saw the trailer for it, and I'm like, I have zero interest in seeing this movie. I know I will hate this. But now I've kind of got on the bandwagon with everyone saying it's so great that I'm at least curious to see it.
You have to. They've made it, the hype has made it so that it's really a human experience.
You know what the big obstacle for me, though, is? If this movie was like 100 minutes, no problem. I probably would have gone by now. But when I know it's 2.5 hours, that means I'm entering a movie theater at 7:30 and not getting out until, what is it, 2 hours and 40 minutes?
It's like it's pretty much.
Holy
pretty,
shit.
Pretty long. Yeah. It's a long time.
That's like
man.
10 after 10.
It's a lot of 3D.
That's a giant chunk of my evening gone. And I'm one of those people, I'm a little weird like this, where when I go to watch a movie, I always have to find out how long it is because I mentally have to prepare for how long I'm going to be sitting in a seat. And then if I need to, I can look at my watch and know when the movie is going to end.
That means you're not enjoying the movie, John, if you have to look at your watch.
And I use that as a barometer. Every time I look at my watch, I figure it's going down one notch in my rating in my head.
By the way, back when we were doing O'Grady's, John Pollock, when he was watching those wrestling shows, I would just count the times he would look at his watch. It would be like sometimes 2 times a segment. He's like...
Those are some long shows, Wei. It's 2 hours of Raw with commercial. And I think you get spoiled when you watch Raw on like a PVR or you can fast forward. And then you got to watch it live with the commercials. That's a long time.
It is long. But Avatar, just treat it like an extended episode of Raw.
So I'm going to try and watch it. A commercial-free edition of Raw with 40 minutes on top of it. So, Wei, it's more like a pay-per-view.
Yeah, well, if you can sit through those, I don't see why you can't sit through Avatar.
Well, I sat through the 1988 Royal Rumble, so we'll get into that review now. Kicks off Wei with the late Ravishing Rick Rude taking on Ricky Steamboat. And this was an era, Wei, of big men, of bodybuilders, and for guys who were smaller, they compensated for that by... enhancing their physiques, and that's what I saw in this match. I mean, Ricky Steamboat was a very smooth worker, but that guy was jacked.
He was, wasn't he? I mean, there were so many candidates on this roster in this show for the Scott Putski Award.
Yeah. We'll label them as we go. But Rick Rude and Ricky Steamboat, clear candidates right off the bat.
Steamboat's entrance, I noticed. We watched, Justin Arthur uploaded, or found a link to an upload of the on-demand version of this show. So, they actually took out Steamboat's music.
Classic theme.
Yeah, I noticed. And they had Howard Finkel, who's still on staff, dub over his voice from the original show.
Oh, did he? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you could really
notice
the
audio difference.
You know
what? Because the first hour of this I watched on the original VHS.
Yes,
the second hour is what I watched on.
So I don't know why. I guess they don't have the rights. And I guess this really much is the extent of Howard Finkel's job these days, is to overdub his own voice on these old tapes.
What's the point of overdubbing your own voice?
Well, just to make it seamless. He overdubbed the announcement over new music. See?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, because you'd have the two feeds, basically. All right. During this match, Jesse Ventura announces that Rude was the winner of the Jesse the Body Award in 1987, which I don't know what the criteria for the Jesse the Body Award was, but I don't think there was drug testing involved.
Probably not.
And then in a funny line, he ripped on Vince McMahon's physique. saying that you would never look like that. And that's something that I've always heard Vince McMahon has very thin skin about, because he's very conscientious about how he looks and his physique. So that was rather funny that Jesse Ventura just had carte blanche to break his balls.
Yeah.
Vince announced that there were 20,000 strong at Cops Coliseum, and the way we've been the Cops Coliseum, it holds nothing over 14.
Well,
it's not a giant arena. That's the reason they can't have a hockey team there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's
are
not.
Are there even that many people in Hamilton?
20,000? There are definitely 20,000
people.
Oh, there
are?
But there were not 20,000 people in the arena at this point. Vince McMahon was describing Rick Rude's offense as all Rude knows is punching. And then did you notice, Wei, I know you always have an eye for this stuff, that at one point when they went outside the ring, they went from one camera inside the ring and they faded to the next shot outside the ring. And it was like...
There was a fade instead of a cut.
Yeah, it was like, are we trying to emphasize 5 minutes later in the match? But this was live. This was recorded live.
That I did not notice.
There was a fade.
Wow. Good eye, man. Fade.
Now, we are in the era way of UFC, and it's been introduced in wrestling through Kurt Angle that when a submission is on, you tap out. And Rick Rude applied a camel clutch.
You know, I noticed this exact same thing.
And Steamboat started tapping furiously.
Yeah.
It's ingrained in wrestling fans now that a tap means it's over. And back then, it just meant that he was fighting to survive.
Wait, how would you actually submit to the camel clutch?
You would have to be like, I guess your face would be kind of, be like, I'll give up. You'd have to, like, go through his fingers and try and... mouth it, because it was always verbal submissions back then.
That's ridiculous.
Because I always debated this with my brother when I was a kid. Was like, because sometimes the submission would occur when the guy was shaking his head, yes, and then others they would stop the match where it was no, and it was always like, well, is he saying no, I can't continue, or no, I don't give up, and then it was yes, I quit. Yes, I'm fine. And it was always so confusing because there was no fucking consistency amongst verbal tap-outs. So I enjoy the tap now. It just means the match is over.
The tapping makes
sense.
And
that only came around in like 99, 2000. It's not even a brand new, you know, it's rather new, I guess, in terms of
pro wrestling. Is that true? It only came around like
it was after
when Bret Hart won the sharpshooter with the sharpshooter.
It was always verbal submissions.
I didn't even notice that. Wow.
The 97 finish was just... That was how it was played at the time, because obviously there was no tap out or anything like
that's
that.
Right, that's right.
It was, to the best of my knowledge, in the WWE at least, it was with Kurt Angle and the ankle lock that they introduced tapping out.
Interesting. Very interesting.
The history lesson here.
Ricky Steamboat here tapped out like six times.
So I gave this match to Rick Rude before it was even over. So that's the unofficial result of this match.
Starts tapping with both hands at one point.
What a baby.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon's commentary in this match. Did you happen to note how many times he said maneuver in this match?
Yes, sir. Nice maneuver by the Dragon.
Another sensational maneuver by ravishing Rick Rude.
And no, it did not.
He was horrible. What a maneuver.
That was...
Unique maneuver.
That was his line. What a maneuver. And then, you know. Jesse, on the other hand, though, I really enjoyed his commentary.
I've always liked Jesse Ventura's commentary. To me, he gave so much credibility to the heels. And
yes.
He was a guy that just brought up simple logic that he almost... He made me sympathize with the heels because I was like, you know what? These guys do get a shit job sometimes out of these officials and the clear bias of Vince McMahon and Gorilla Monsoon.
Exactly. It makes you still hate the person. You don't like their decision they've made, but you can see why they've made that decision.
It made sense. I always was a fan of Jesse Ventura's commentary. And I mean, a lot of people weren't fans of Gorilla Monsoon, but for me, Monsoon and Ventura were my favorite duo together.
Cool.
Now, this match ends with a... Steamboat was in a Bruno Sammartino-style backbreaker that Rude had applied, and then they called a disqualification. But you see, there was confusion because everyone thought that Steamboat had submitted verbally to this submission. And as Rude is leaving, they keep the camera on Rude as he's exiting, and you can tell what's going to happen. And Vince, like, they don't even leave it to chance. Vince is like... Rick Rude thinks he has won. And then they do the big reveal where the winner of this match As a result of a disqualification, Ricky Steamboat, and they show Rude shocked. But it was like, the way they followed Rude with the camera, and Vince was like, well, he thinks he's won. You ruined the surprise of the announcement.
But John, as a 3.5-year-old WWF viewer, would you have come to that conclusion?
I'm not watching this as a 3.5-year-old. I'm watching this as a 25-year-old.
Yes, well, anyway, I had no problems with this finish. It was completely logical. Rude dragged Dave Hebner in the way of Steamboat's flying crossbody, so Hebner was injured, and then it's easy to think that he would have won.
I'm just not a fan of matches that go this amount of time and end with a disqualification. I think after 10 minutes in a match, you almost must finish with at least some kind of decision.
Yeah, well, disqualifications happen in real fights.
You're using Vince Russo's logic.
No,
now.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking about Frank Shamrock versus Enzo Gracie. Disqualification. Good match, nonetheless.
But if I was booking that fight, if it got to the third round, I would have booked a finish. People were pissed after that.
Are we arguing about realism here?
No, I'm just arguing about you. If people are going to invest 50... This match was like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And you got a bullshit finish.
I think people wanted to see Steamboat win, regardless of how he won.
Well, okay. We can disagree about that segment, but I think we're going to agree wholeheartedly about this next segment, which went approximately 58 minutes. It was the weightlift challenge for Dino Bravo, who was going to challenge the world record of 705 pounds to break the world record, and he was going to have Jesse Ventura as his spotter.
I was doubtful even about the weight listed in the record, but I actually looked it up, and it actually is true. At the time, in 1985, Ted Arcidi held the record with a bench press of 705 pounds.
And Ted Arcidi?
Yes, yes. Former, had a brief run in the WWF.
Horrible, horrible wrestler.
Yes. And just for comparison's sake, today's bench press record stands at 1,075 pounds.
Well, I think also, because Dave Meltzer will talk about weightlifting a lot in the Wrestling Observer newsletter, and apparently there are these new shirts that you can wear that makes comparisons completely irrelevant now, because back then, before they had these shirts, it was like a different criteria that you were judging based on. So now the fact it's 1,075 pounds, I think it has something to... I could be completely wrong. If anyone has ever seen a picture of me, I am the least amount of authority on weightlifting.
But the drugs are much better these days.
Drugs are way better in 2010 than they were. Well, you know, there were some big bodies here, but...
Who knows what we've got right now in the scientists' labs.
Dino Bravo demands the Hamilton fans be silent. And I guess these fans didn't realize that they were cast members.
Yes.
And they were telling a story to millions of people on the USA Network. Steve Small should have been there to address the crowd prior here.
Yes.
And Gene Okerlund notes, quiet! It's a source of distraction. Which was another thing Steve Small brought up in that speech, which... I hope we have some time to chat about it at the end
Absolutely.
Of this show, because that was an all-time great video for me in the history of wrestling.
It is a classic, yes.
And I actually recorded the audio because I know that video is going to be taken down, and I want it to always live on my desktop, so I now have it forever, forever. Now, what weight did they start at? Weight was like 500 pounds?
They started
up
at 400 pounds.
400 pounds.
Bravo starts warming up with that weight. Then they turn it up to 505. Jesse this whole time was spotting Dino, of course. So Dino successfully lifts that weight. Then we move up to 555 pounds. And the whole time the heat for this segment was building just from Dino Bravo telling the crowd to shut up, to not distract him.
For me, the heat for me was dying by each. I thought they were going to go in increments of like 100. Okay, we'll start at 500 and we'll be up to 7 in 3 lifts. They must have done like 6 lifts here.
They did a total of, so they did 400, 505, 555, 595.
Oh my God.
655. Then they moved up to 715 pounds.
And
the
then
world record.
Jesse Ventura was amazing in this segment. He took this so seriously, and Gene is just like, what weight are we at now for the final one? 715 pounds, but that's not official because the bar must be taken and weighed later at a different date. This was awesome by Jesse Ventura. The rest of the segment went on forever.
It went on for a long time, and I was expecting a really good payoff, but then Dino Bravo attempts a 750-pound world record lift. He gets it halfway through, and then Jesse sees that he can't do it, so Jesse lifts it up for him. But Mean Gene this whole time is standing behind him, so Mean Gene doesn't see it. And Mean Gene just believes that Dino Bravo has just set the world record. They play the music and everything. And I realize, you know, the payoff would have ended up in some sort of way to cheat, but this was just a really stupid way to cheat.
Well, how else could you cheat in a segment like this?
You could change the weights, make the weights not like that, like, you know, like fake weights. Or you could do something with the shirts, like Meltzer said. Maybe he could
get way too complicated.
Altered the shirt.
For me, dumbing it down for your audience, I think that was the most effective way you could cheat at
Come
a weightlifting
on.
Contest.
But who...
They should have revealed he was on steroids.
That would have been a great way
That would have been revolutionary.
Much more realistic. But anyway, Jesse tells the crowd that... So they celebrate the victory and they go to commercial break. But the Vince, meanwhile, is like, I don't think he did it. I don't think he did it.
So we just wasted 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Next match, Way, we have a women's tag match. It's a 2 out of 3 falls match between the Glamour Girls, Judy Martin and Leilani Kai, managed by Jimmy Hart, against the Jumping Bomb Angels of Norio Tateno and Itsuki Yamazaki.
Mm-hmm. This was a 2 out of 3 falls match for the WWF Women's Tag Team titles. A title that I didn't even know existed.
Neither did I. I will be completely honest. I had no idea there was a women's tag team championship belt. The Jumping Bomb Angels at the time were like a very, like, they came into the World Wrestling Federation, were having these fantastic matches, which I didn't think this match really was, but I would blame that more on Judy Martin and Leilani Kai.
I actually really enjoyed this match.
Did you?
At this point, the Glamour Girls were actually the tag champs for over 2.5 years. So, they received this title shot with the Jumping Bomb Angels received this title shot after beating the Glamour Girls in a Survivor Series match. And again, I noted that we had Howard Finkel overdub their theme music. I guess they didn't have the rights to their Japanese theme music. On claims that he was just spotting Bravo close and that there was space between his hands and the bar.
Yes.
Which I thought was really funny. But this match, these women could really work, and mostly the Jumping Bomb Angels, but I was impressed for the level of the time and also the fact that they were women, knowing what I know about women's wrestling in the WWF these days. I was really impressed with the work.
The Angels won the last 2 falls to win the match and the titles. And do you have any idea whatever happened to those tag titles?
No idea.
All right.
But no, I just wanted to just note, this was actually probably my favorite match out of the whole card, John. I don't know if you'd agree. But Work Rate Rise, this was an example of...
Wasn't a lot of competition on this show.
No, there wasn't. But this was, for its time...
Yeah, I'll admit, I didn't have a... This is where my tape was starting to screw up, and I was having a lot of problems watching this match, so I did miss... bits and pieces of this match, so I will not degrade this match. It just nothing stood out to me of what I did see, but we will take Way's word for it that match was the best match of the card. Next up, Way, it's a recap of the Hulk Hogan Andre the Giant feud going back to WrestleMania of the previous March, where they met at WrestleMania 3. And they were brought into the ring because they're setting up the rematch between the two almost 1 year later that they were setting up for February the 5th in Indianapolis, Indiana, on a live edition of Saturday Night's Main Event.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Tunney is in the ring, and boy, he was terrible.
Yes, he was.
As both men were staring at each other, his words were, "Let's get with it and sit down."
See, he was no good, but he was... believable. He was very believable.
He was a president that was put on television and was not comfortable on television.
Exactly.
His business was putting matches together and running the business, not being some television character.
Exactly. He wasn't the most entertaining guy, but he played the part. The whole basis of this rematch was really the controversy stemming from their WrestleMania 3 match. If you remember, John... Hogan's first attempt at body slamming Andre failed and ended with Andre falling on top of Hogan for a near fall. So the whole controversy surrounding this rematch, or surrounding that match, built to this rematch, and I just thought this was such a simple way to build to
a near fall, and they got a year out of it.
Oh yeah, and why can't we get back to basics like this?
Andre looked great in his hunter green sports coat. Hulk Hogan conversely wore a white sleeveless shirt, blue jeans, and white cowboy boots. And it culminated with Hogan getting his face knocked into the table by Andre, and then the table being flipped over on top of Hulk Hogan. This was very fun to watch.
This was fun. This was fun from a nostalgic point of view. And just from... these guys, Hogan, really, was in his prime here.
Yes, I mean, at this point. And that match would go on to become... it was the most watched match, the most watched wrestling match in cable in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. It did just ridiculous numbers that you'll never see. There's been more watched matches in Japan, but in the U.S. and Canada,
really, huh?
No wrestling match has been seen by more people than that Hulk Hogan Andre the Giant match. To this day?
That is incredible.
I can get the official number. I won't guess the range it was in, but it was a gigantic number at the time.
I really liked DiBiase in this segment, too.
DiBiase carried this segment,
yeah,
I thought.
Because
Andre obviously can't cut a promo, and Ted DiBiase did all of the talking for him, and it was really done well with the angle at the end. They signed the contract, and this, the whole point of the Royal Rumble here, it was to go against an NWA event, but also it was really to push hard this February 5th show, and it, as I said with the ratings, it obviously was a success for the company. We then go to the first ever televised Royal Rumble, and a unique part here is that only 20 men in this Royal Rumble instead of the usual 30 that they would go to the following year and every year up and since that point. So, Wei, we'll go through the entrance here, and I guess if there's a point here, you can just jump in here of anything that struck you. We started off with Bret Hart and Tito Santana, so those are some interesting trivia questions there.
Yes. At one point with these two in the ring, Ventura says, "It's quite ironic that Santana and Bret Hart both start the Rumble. There's no love lost between these two."
I wrote that down. Not ironic.
This word has been abused for over 20 years.
It's just been disgustingly abused. Howard Finkel is explaining the rules of the Rumble, and they cut to a fan at ringside with the most confused look on his face, and they just kept it there for like 12 seconds. Butch Reed was the third in. Butch Reed, I will say, horrible.
Horrible.
Not a good worker.
Oh, but he looked fantastic.
He looked fantastic. Another candidate. Number four was Jim Neidhart, so obviously the Hart Foundation having a bit of an advantage here against Tito and Butch Reed, who were not acquaintances in the World Wrestling Federation. Followed up by Jake Roberts, and then the first elimination in the Royal Rumble was Butch Reed, who was eliminated by Jake right away as Jake got into the ring. Harley Race, Jim Brunzel, and then number eight, Sam Houston with a gigantic pop in Hamilton. I don't understand.
Where is he from? Where's Sam Houston?
Sam
from?
Houston?
Yeah.
He had like a Texas gimmick. He was no ties to Hamilton or Canada. I didn't understand.
Maybe he looked like somebody famous from Hamilton.
Then Tito Santana was eliminated. Danny Davis was in this match. Boris Zukov. Don Morocco. Now, this was weird. Don Morocco came out, and Nikolai Volkov was running with him. Behind him.
Yes.
And seeing Nikolai Volkov run was funny enough. But then he just stood there at ringside, and when the 12th entrant was to come out, he just got in the ring.
I think what had happened was Nikolai thought he had number 11 or something.
Who's there at the entrance to make sure one guy runs out? No, Nikolai, you're going out after Don.
No clue. No clue who was back there.
Jesus. Did you also notice, this got really frustrating for me, that they'd have the countdown clock, and then they'd cut to the entrance with like 2 seconds left, and they'd run out. They didn't wait till the clock expired.
Yeah, well, all I could think of back then, perhaps, the officiating was not up to par of what Royal Rumble standards are
today.
They
have a monitor in the back, just as soon as it's zero, the guy runs out.
Maybe they
not at two, zero.
Maybe they didn't have a time sync with the clock on the screen. And
maybe
the clock
there was
back
a delay.
There.
Not impressed by the production in this Royal Rumble. Number 13 was Jim Duggan, who I noted here came out prior to the countdown ending. Ron Bass, B. Brian Blair, Hillbilly Jim, Dino Bravo, who just set a world record coming back for the Royal Rumble. The Ultimate Warrior was number 18. One Man Gang and then Junkyard Dog was the 20th entrant. And watching this, you would have assumed the Ultimate Warrior would go over in this match. But in fact, it came down to Jim Duggan, Dino Bravo, the One Man Gang,
and Don Morocco.
So the One Man Gang came down to him and Duggan. And One Man Gang, who 22 years later, the initials of his name would be a popular phrase amongst teenagers, ran at Duggan, who pulled down the ropes and OMG ran right over the top rope and eliminated himself. And Jim Duggan got the win, and nothing, because there was nothing on the line. This was just a battle royal. No WrestleMania.
No.
No prize money. No title shot. Nothing.
So Hacksaw, Jim Duggan. First.
Not even the main event of the show.
That was the thing. It was so weird. This match was good from a historical point of view. Just because it was the first Rumble, you could really notice the beginnings of all the elements that we've grown to love about the match today, like the countdown, the double teaming, the balance and power between the heels and the faces. It was a good look at the first incarnation.
It was a greatly conceived gimmick that Pat Patterson came up with, and it was something that eventually grew, and now with the whole history behind it, I think that's the reason it's the number two show of the year. So, you know, we saw the beginnings of it here in 1988. Not the most entertaining battle royal I've ever seen. A pretty unnoteworthy event. But from there, we go to Hulk Hogan, who was interviewed by Greg DeGeorge, who is actually Craig Minervini, who is actually a legit sports broadcaster nowadays. Hulk Hogan says that in order to beat me, you have to beat all the Hulkamaniacs, and it can't be done. And he says that February 5th, he's coming for Andre the Giant.
Yes. Hogan's promo style, I realize, has been exactly the same for the past 20 years. When he talks in TNA these days, like I can't tell if he's being a heel or a face, because there's just a bit of a phony feeling to the way he talks. But then I realize, you know, like audiences have changed so much in the past 20 years. He was talking to kids back then in this style, and it worked. But today, I don't know, it doesn't really work for me.
Bit of a disconnect. And now to our main event of the first ever Royal Rumble, a match years in the making, dream match, if you will, Way. The Islanders, Tama and Haku, against the Young Stallions, Paul Roma and Jim Powers. Two out of three falls, Way, because one fall is just not enough. This is what closed the show. They were talking about how the Islanders had kidnapped Matilda from the British Bulldogs and had her captive somewhere. And then Ventura and Vince just started talking about Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan, and talking about Giant-a-mania as opposed to Hulk-a-mania. And then Ventura was talking about how the moral majority against the immoral minority, and comparing Andre the Giant to Abby Hoffman and Hogan to Jerry Falwell.
Yes.
Some odd comments. What did you think about this match, Way?
The match, I honestly didn't really care for. I didn't know much about the participants, and I wasn't sure why this was a main
event. It felt like an opening match to close the show.
Yeah.
It was like UFC 100, where they finished with John Fitch and Paulo Thiago.
Yes, it felt like a rubber match. A swing bout.
Yes.
Yeah, swing bout, that's what you call it.
What can you say? The Islanders won in two straight falls with working over Roma's knee and destroying it for the second fall, where Roma was verbally submitting.
I don't know why this was a main event. Perhaps it was a swing bout. Maybe they didn't think they would have enough time if the Rumble went long.
I guess so.
But they ended up with like 20 minutes to talk afterwards. Just Jesse
and
Vince.
Yeah, they came back from break, and Jesse and Vince just had to kill time till, I guess, the top of the hour. So they had, when I looked at my screen and saw how much time was left and they were going to the last match between the Islanders and the Young Stallions, there was a lot of fast-forwarding in this match.
Yeah.
So that was the first ever Royal Rumble. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10. It was an event that did not blow me away.
Wow.
It was just a very average, boring event.
For me, this was the first 80s WWF show that we watched. So it was the first 80s WWF show that I'd seen in a long time. So the nostalgia aspect played huge for me, and I really enjoyed this show. There were none of the matches were bad. They were either average to very good. The women's match being the highlight for me. The Bravo weightlifting stuff, I even enjoyed that.
I hated that.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it was.
I liked Jesse in that, but that was.
It was fun. It was fun. The commentary team of Jesse and Vince are great together. I give this an 8 out of 10.
8? Wow. Well, I'm not going to say this event was bad. I was bored throughout. And the first hour watching it on shitty VHS quality, I think, brought it down for me a lot, too.
Yeah.
So that is my ranking for this one. Now, in the spirit of the Royal Rumble, all of you who are members of our group got a message this week about our Royal Rumble pool. So you can send those to me up until Sunday. First at noon Eastern time. That's the day of the Royal Rumble. We're going to be giving out prizes to the top three finishers. You get to vote or at least put in your picks for a number of categories, including who wins the Rumble, who comes out first, 30th, most eliminations, who lasts the shortest, longest. So send those in to me, John, J-O-H-N, at thefightnetwork.com and put in the subject line Royal Rumble Pool. And we'll be announcing the winners 2 weeks from now, and we'll have three prize winners.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting.
Yes, so it's going to be our next contest coming up. And Wei, for next week, what are we going to be reviewing?
Next week, we will be reviewing Exposed, Pro Wrestling's Greatest Secrets. Was that part of the package that Dan gave to us?
Yes, I believe so.
But do not worry if Dan Lebransky did not give you guys a copy. I will be posting up a YouTube link to the video that I found.
Oh, fantastic.
On the Facebook group, so you can all watch it. Give us your feedback.
Yeah, go post on the wall. We appreciate all your feedback on the wall. Go join the group, the official Facebook group of Review Away. We're always adding members to it, so maybe we can hit 400 by WrestleMania.
Ooh, that's a good goal.
It's a bit of a lofty goal for us, but we'll shoot for 400, and... Wait, I guess to close out the show today, I mentioned it earlier, but I think in lieu of a song this week, I want to go out with Steve Small, the producer for TNA, addressing the Impact Zone, and my highlight of this video being the two fans taking this video and their comments.
Let me just say, John, let the Dino Bravo challenge be a lesson to TNA. You can't tell a wrestling crowd what to do. Wrestling crowds have been trained for years to do specifically the opposite of what they're being told they can't do. So I don't know why the Universal Studios staff would think otherwise.
You would think that if we're not getting the reactions we want and we're not giving a product that the people are responding to, who's not doing their job? Mm-hmm. The fans or the people that are putting this show together? Well, it's just such a slap in the face, and it makes this organization look so rinky-dink. Like, just a complete disconnect. I give Hogan and Bischoff till the end of May, and then they're gone. Because they're going to be like, fuck this.
They're going to run out of money. Something's going to happen.
This is going to be such a blemish on their resumes that they came into TNA, had no semblance of who the audience was, and gave up, and it was just a failure. And TNA is going to be just... They're going to look like such a joke after this, and how they're going to have to repair this company. Because... after seeing that Montreal finish this past week on Impact, this company is lost. They're just lost.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
So here we go. Going out with some Steve Small in the Impact Zone.
Anybody who doesn't know me and know what I'm talking about, I'm the director of production here, and I try and get all the elements up on the show. This is Bernadette Everlaw. She's my counterpart. She makes it for us to work.
I'm loving everybody.
As cast members, I realize I've never included you guys in what your role is, nor have I ever gone into a script.
This is happening. Are you taping this?
This is really happening.
Is this really happening? Really?
Yeah, there you go.
This is a revolution.
Here's what we want to talk about.
What do you do?
What we're doing here is we're trying... You helped us. On January 4th, the live show here, we had our highest rating ever in the 7th year. And a half later, which was the tape show, we had one of our highest ratings, so we're holding those as well. But here's what's important to us. When you go to an arena show, when you buy your ticket, just like going to a baseball game, man. You can get down on the bad pitcher, or you can be like those old New Orleans Saints where you wore a bag over your head.
But you can't.
I understand that here. But here, what we ask you, we certainly want to entertain you. We hope we are giving you a great show that you'll enjoy and will be part of it. But most importantly, you have to help us tell a story to the 2 million people who watch the show.
I thought wrestling
so was real. Every time you come here, I want you to be excited. I know that's difficult sometimes. We change, things break. But I want you to be excited. That's number one. Number two, sometimes you hear things going up here that are beyond what a child should hear or should be on TV. Those things, we spend money editing out. We erase it. It takes a lot of editing. What I cannot have from the audience is curses, flip birds, gang signs that I may not understand. That's it. Pigs, yes. Winston Churchill, ladies and gentlemen. So
Winston Churchill wasn't a juggalo.
I have a question for you, sir. I also worked in production, and I had a comment about the pay-per-view. During the recent Monday Night Live impact, when people were saying, people were saying bullshit, and what they were doing on TV is they were muting the master left and right, so there was actually muting on TV. I think it would be more efficient if you muted the audience mics and not the whole feed, so you don't get complete silence.
How many mics do we have?
This guy rules.
80 mics. I have mics all over. There's a mic here. There's a mic here. There's a mic under here. There's mics over here. And when you go in that, I cannot mute everything. So I ask you not to say BS. Say BS. Don't say the other thing. So, to carry this forward, so we get the show going, and I'm not the principal, I've been the priest, I've been the lawyers, and I know the principal.
Ask him why he waits 6 years to do this.
Number one, I've got little kids here, and I don't want little kids here.
Why did you bring them?
Family part. So, I know my demographic is my friends up here, the guys stand up and smoke, but my future demographic and the growth in my audience is this young man standing here. So please, watch your language. Please, watch what you do. If I ask you to remove a sign, I'm not even sure the reason. Somebody saw something in a truck, something may go on. Also, if you're obstructing somebody all night, we love signs, you know, but sometimes we ask signs.
That guy.
We're going to be watching you, however. When we see this violation, we're going to ask you to move. I want you to have fun, have excitement, but you are cast members here. Our people, if they do something,
totally no fun. Totally no fun. Totally no fun.
Jesus. So please, let's keep it.
Wow.
It's active, it's TV-14, but let's watch what we say. No fingers, no cursing. Please, I know it's fun to try and distract the talent up here, but they got to tell a story to 2 million people. You're part of us. You're helping us tell the story. Please don't try and distract the story. Unless you're done. Thank you very much. You've done a great job. Thank you for being here.